Hello and welcome to the Nonfiction Podcast. I'm Matt Musateri. This week, we're taking a look at The Revolutionary Routine of Life as a Female Trucker, written by Jessica Ogilvie for BuzzFeed in March 2016. Jessica Ogilvie is a regular contributor to LA Magazine, Playboy, and LA Weekly. Her writing has also appeared in the New York Times, the Los Angeles Times, Vice, The Hairpin, Complex, Condé Nast Traveler, and LAist. It's great to have Jessica on the podcast. Her story, The Revolutionary Routine of Life as a Female Trucker, is about Melissa Rojas. Jessica rides along with Melissa for 6 days and more than 3,500 miles, where she learns about the challenges of life on the road. Here's a brief excerpt from the feature. It's mid-morning on a muggy Wednesday in August, and Melissa Rojas and I are careening east through Texas on Interstate 30. The sky is ominous and dark for miles, but we're making good time, and we're convinced we'll outrun any storm that's brewing. Just outside of Dallas, though, the heavens crack open and we slam into sheets of water. The road becomes a manic gray blur. Red brake lights pop up ahead. A man's voice yells over the CB radio, "Where the fuck did the road go?" 20 yards up, a black sedan has spun out. Rojas, 34, slows our Freightliner Coronado to 55 miles per hour, then 35, then 15 as we glide around the accident. Throughout this meteorological emergency, Rojas has kept her French manicured hands resting calmly on the steering wheel. As we drive past the breakdown, she eases the 13-speed gear shift into sixth. "This is actually no more dangerous than being in a car," she says casually, reaching up to adjust her rearview mirror. "That car spun up because it was really light. But," she adds, turning her eyes back to the road, "if I hydroplane, we're flipping over." I'm trying not to panic, but I will later be told that my knuckles turned white during what seemed to be a close brush with death. But for Rojas, a third-generation truck driver, this moment could not be more ordinary. The Michigan-based mom has been behind the wheel of long-haul trucks for 3.5 years and currently runs a route that takes her from Michigan to New Mexico and back again, a 6-day, 3,500-mile round trip that she makes every single week. If you haven't already read the story, the link to the article is in the show notes and on the podcast website at nonfictionpodcast.com. Go ahead and pause the show. Come back after you read it. Otherwise, fair warning, we'll be discussing the story and will likely spoil a lot of details. And now, without further delay, here's my interview with Jessica Ogilvie. I'm talking with Jessica Ogilvie. She's the author of Rambling Woman, A Week on the Road with a Female Trucker, which appeared in BuzzFeed earlier this March in 2016. Jessica, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, Matt.
Let's start with how did this story come about and how did you find yourself in this truck for almost a week with Melissa Rojas?
Right. Story actually came about. What happened was I had stumbled across this story about a lawsuit regarding sexual assault in the trucking industry, which I talk about in the story. And so that was my original idea, to kind of dig into that and see what was going on in the legal sense and what the problem was. And when I spoke to my editor about it, she said, "You know, I think that people aren't really aware enough of the industry itself yet to skip ahead and talk about the lawsuit. So why don't we kind of have this entry point be that, hey, there are female truckers and this is what their lives are like. And then we can segue into the sort of the dangerous conditions as part of the story." But that's actually how it came about.
And how did you find Melissa as the main focus of your story?
It's funny with these things. It's never straightforward. But I had actually initially planned on going with a different woman who I found. There's a group called Real Women in Trucking, and it's like a Facebook group that I found. And I had met met this other person through that. And at the very last minute, she decided it wasn't a right for her, wasn't a good fit. And so, but she had trained Melissa a couple of years ago, when Melissa started driving. So she said, you know what, why don't you try her? She might be open to it. And I got on the phone with Melissa and we just really hit it off. And so, so that's how I found her. It was good luck.
And what was that conversation like? Like, how do you pitch something like this? It seems like it would be a little bit strange to sort of say, hey, can I ride with you and sleep in your truck for the next 5 days, the next time you go somewhere?
Yeah. I thought it was going to be a lot more awkward than it actually was, because I kind of had the same thought as you're having, which is like, yeah, hey, you don't know me, but can I spend a week with you 24/7? But actually, it's pretty common. It's so common that they, you know, they call it a ride along and they, oh, okay, she wants to do a ride along. Okay. You know, it's like, it's a thing. As it out. So when I was on the phone with her, you know, I did the same thing that I always do, which is I talked to her for a long time, and I always try to get to know people if I'm going to be working with them that closely, and make sure that they not just understand what I'm going to do, but feel completely comfortable with it. 'Cause the last thing I want is for someone, you know, to get off the phone with me and think, oh, actually, like, I have this question and that question, and now I don't feel comfortable. So I think the first time we spoke for about 45 minutes or an hour, and I told her about myself, and I asked her about, you know, her life and things relating and not relating to the story, and told her why I wanted to do it. And, you know, I mean, you have to obviously have the buy-in of the subject. They have to want to tell the story as well. But she's so passionate and she loves what she does, and she really wanted the story out there. So she's the whole time I was with her, she's like, I'm just so glad. Like, I hope that you can open people's eyes to what we do and what our lives are like. So it was great in that sense.
And I noticed that there are a couple of themes, and you touched on this a few minutes ago. There are some serious issues that are related to the story regarding how women truckers are treated and some of the threats they face and some of the harassment they face. And then there's also just this individual story of this particular woman that you met and wound up going on this ride with. Did your focus of what you thought the story was going to be about shift the more you talked to her or the more time you spent with her?
Yeah, it definitely did, because, you know, I went in with, first of all, I had no understanding of what a truck driver's life was like. So I, you know, whatever I had as far as an idea of what it might be like was sort of based on my own imagination. So I envisioned, you know, I knew that there was a danger element to it. I knew that sometimes truck stops weren't the most friendly places for women, to say the least. And I knew that, you know, we're on the open road. And so actually, you know, when I went into it, I was thinking, oh, okay, I'm going to hit all of these points about, you know, maybe we'll encounter a dangerous situation. Maybe we'll encounter like a sleazy situation. Maybe we'll, and it turned out to be, the story turned out to be about, you know, it's almost a mundane type job, actually, if you're, right, if you're smart and you're safe the way she is. So it's like, yeah, I mean, I definitely, there weren't really any very dangerous. I mean, everybody that I met and spent time with, you know, like I think I have her friend Edward in there, was just a really nice, like, family person and just kind of wanting to do a job and support their family. So yeah, it definitely changed.
I think one of my favorite scenes in this piece is when I think you're with her and you're kind of walking around the truck and you're pointing to elements of the vehicle. And I was just going to read this little moment. Most people that listen to the podcast, some have read the story before and some haven't. So I'll just read this passage. What is this called? I say. Rojas looks down at me incredulously. The trailer, she says. Trailer. She points again to the large compartment. Tractor. She points at points to the cab. Tractor trailer. I've never been around anyone who's literally that clueless. I have to realize, she will tell me later, that there are people out there like you.
Yeah.
Which I thought which is great. It's a nice bit of humor in the piece, but it's also, it allows the readers of this piece to sort of be, you're our surrogate, that you get to be the one that gets mocked by her.
Right.
Because I imagine most people reading this article, including myself, were equally clueless, like, oh, that's what they mean by tractor trailer. I get it.
Right. Yeah.
So it's interesting that you had to kind of orient yourself to this world and not just based on kind of these impressions you had before you did the story.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, what was funny to me about that, and what was, I mean, stories like this is so are very humbling because you're in someone else's world. But to me, it's like I'm so I was so this world was so foreign to me that I'm like, wow, I've never met a female truck driver. And then I realized in that moment that she was having the exact same experience I was having. Like, wow, I've never met such an idiot. Like, I've never met so like.
I can imagine she's thinking you're getting paid to do what you're doing.
I'm sure she was. I'm sure she's like, what? Like, you're getting paid to like figure out that their trucking is a big industry in this country. It was a very, very, humbling. And she was and she was right to say that. It's amazing the things that we don't know about our, the basic way that our economy functions.
Right. It's already all there at Target, and we don't really think about how it gets there.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So how much additional research did you do before you actually met with her in person and get in the truck? How much did you spend really digging into, the background of truckers and trucking and all the issues that are surrounding it today?
To be honest with you, I did some. I mean, I read the lawsuit, and I read up on the trucker shortage. And there's like a union that I looked around on their website, and I'm trying, and I did and I made a couple calls to some other organizations, but I didn't really entrench in that kind of research until after, partly because I wanted to go in with sort of a fresh mind and no preconceived notions about what I was going to see. So I sort of saved that research until after I had already gone with her.
So let's talk about the ride you take. Tell me what that was like. So imagine you flew out to her and did you guys just meet the morning of the ride? How did it start?
Yeah, so I flew out to Grand Rapids. She lives in a town called Coldwater, and Grand Rapids is about an hour north of Coldwater. And so I stayed overnight in a hotel there, and she actually came and picked me up from the hotel. And I mean, when I hoped that I got across how just above and beyond generous she was. Like, she was open arms, above and beyond. So there's. She's just amazing person. So, she came and picked me up an hour out of her way, and we went back to her house, and it was fine. I mean, I think we were both kind of feeling each other out, but we're both very talkative, and she's very talkative and chatty and outgoing. So it wasn't really awkward at first, and then we went back to Coldwater, and she kind of got her stuff together, and we did some shopping at Walmart for food to take with us on the trip, and that's kind of how it began.
And then, so tell me what it was like being in the truck this long and being in with her. I mean, the story goes through a lot of your experiences, but what was that like just as a matter of being with a subject nonstop for 5, 6, 7 days?
Right. It was interesting. I mean, that was the most time I'd ever spent with a subject. And I think, part of it is it's a very interesting balance because on one hand, you can't do your usual sort of like bullshit reporter thing when you're with someone for that long. Like, and I don't mean like, like you can't be surface. Like, you just can't maintain that. It's not like I'm usually surface, but you're professional. And then after 3 days on the road with someone, the professional piece of it kind of falls by the wayside. So it was an interesting balance and sort of remembering to pay attention to the trip as a story, and what I needed to write down, and then finding the right time to do interviews because you're together so much that it's like, okay, well, we've been in this truck now for 5 hours. How about I randomly start asking you some interview questions? It's like these sort of like interpersonal things were tricky, but it was smooth otherwise. I think the biggest thing was just for me, just being okay with the fact that I was not going to be professional the whole time.
Right.
And I was going to do things that probably, you know, were unprofessional, and I was going to be, I mean, we became friends, I think, and that's impossible not to do when you're with someone that much.
How much are you actually writing things down and recording during all this, you know, versus just sort of trying to remember things after the fact?
Yeah, I was writing constantly. I actually didn't record, but I think I filled up like 3 notebooks. I was constantly writing, and I set the tone for that immediately when she picked me up. I had my notebook out, and the very first thing she said, I wrote down, and she was like, "Oh God!" So, you know, so she became very comfortable with me having my notebook out the whole time. There was no remembering afterwards, which I'm glad, because I think it would have been too confusing just because of the amount of time we were together.
Right, right. And was it ever awkward or strained being, you know, stuck together this long? I've been on a lot of road trips from the East Coast to the West Coast or the other way around. And even with my best friends in the world, after about 2 or 3 days, we're really getting annoyed at each other and arguing about where we're going to stop to get something to eat. Was there ever any weird tension when you're in this car?
Yeah, there. I would say there were 2 incidents that I can think of. I think the very first, when we went to Walmart to get food, it's very, as it turns out, very awkward to grocery shop with someone you don't know. because that was just kind of like, we were trying to be nice and friendly with each other. And like, but then like, I don't really want to buy that. And I actually don't want that. And what about this brand? So that was awkward. And then, by the end, I think by like day 5, I think her patience was running out. We had been on the road for a long time. She really wanted to get home. And it was never like anything, I would actually say it wasn't anything very blatant. I could tell that she was sort of running out of patience, and it was, I was like, oh shit. Like, I don't want her to, like, you know, I just always feel so like, oh God, I'm sorry I put you in this position. Like, let me try and make it okay. You know, so I remember we went to a Mexican restaurant, and I think she was just kind of like giving me a hard time about, like, kind of like poking fun at me. And I was like, I think you maybe mean this, but okay.
There was one line in the piece that was about the middle of the story where you said, if Rojas were alone, as she usually is, she would pass the time by calling her kids, her family, or a list of about 5 friends she talks to daily, mm-hmm. one of whom she calls Preacher. I was wondering, did you get the sense that she was holding back from doing what she normally would do because you were in the cab with her?
No, I don't think so. I think that the only difference was, cause she did talk to her kids. She called her kids. And like, I think I talked about, she called her landlord and she talked to her boss and stuff. I think the only thing was that I became the substitute for the people that she normally call. Yeah.
When you came toward the end of this journey, and you mentioned that you had 3 notebooks worth of stuff, how did you start to sort out what you were going to include and what you wouldn't? I imagine after all those days, you had a lot of stuff to work with.
I had so much stuff to work with. Actually, the first draft of this story was almost 10,000 words. And I think the first draft was like 6,500. I just decided to approach it the same way I always do, which is I type up all my notes, which takes a long time. And then I tried to sort of go through it beat by beat and think like, okay, what are the scenes that just immediately stand out to me that I know I want to include? And then I pretty much started with those and then worked around them, if that makes sense. So like, I knew I wanted to include the scene about the West Memphis pilot, or East Memphis, I think. And I knew that I wanted to include some of the conversations we had about her parents and about, you know, her family. So I started with whatever felt like important to me. And then I went from there.
And there were some of these broader issues beyond her story. And I was wondering how you decided how much you wanted to sort of blend into the narrative of this ride and your experience with her, these other issues of the challenges to women truckers, some of the risks they face. You know, how did you balance that part of the story with the general narrative of being with this woman?
Yeah, I think it's always a delicate balance because you don't want to lose the reader in numbers, you know. But at the same time, you know, to me, because I really just had one subject, I wanted to make sure to get the point across that, like, no, this is an industry-wide issue. It's not just her. It's not, you know. But I actually think that in the final version of the story, it was less that my editor cut some of that stuff out. And it was mostly just to, you know, for length, to tighten it up. But I think it could be, I felt it could be done fairly quickly. Like it didn't have, we didn't really have to get into anyone else's story too much. But I did want to make sure to include the passages from the lawsuit that are really quite horrific. Like just to give a sort of tone to the story and how dangerous it actually is and how kind of like lawless in some ways it actually is.
And you had all this material, all these scenes. Tell me about how you decided what you ultimately would use for the opening scene in this piece.
I knew from the get-go that I would use that as the opening scene because it was the first time that in my notebook I wrote shit just got real. And it was the first time that I felt really in danger. And it was the only time I felt in danger. And so to me, you know, we had been riding along, we were having fun, we ate fast food, you know, we talked. And then all of a sudden I realized, like she said, if this thing flips, we're gonna die. And that like I was
Right.
like, oh, I'm in a this is real. Like I'm in a real situation here. So that was it kind of stood out as far.
And likewise, how did you decide how to close the piece? I find that the endings of stories are often more difficult than the beginnings, really. And
Yeah.
how did you figure that element of it?
I struggled with that one partly because I had my I felt maybe it was a little bit abrupt. But at the end of the day, that was the message that I took away from her. Like I wrote it and I reread the story later and I thought, yeah, maybe this is like maybe I don't this is kind of like I don't segue, I don't ease into this. This is very sudden. But the distance when I had some distance from the story, I like what is the end game here? And the end game for her is taking care of her family. She just wants to be home. And so that to me was kind of it, I wanted to leave readers with that this is a job she does for her family, and I wanted that feeling of like that desperation to get home to her kids to be, you know, for them to kind of feel what we felt at the end of the trip.
And when it comes to these elements like the beginning and the ending of things, I was talking with Dan Barry from the New York Times for this week's episode, and I asked him how confident do you feel that you've nailed these things when you're doing the final version of the story? Or are you ever sort of, submitting the final story and thinking, I don't know, maybe I shouldn't have ended there. Maybe I shouldn't have opened with that scene.
Right. Well, I'd love to know what he said, but because I always wonder the same thing. You know, for me, it's really like story to story. I definitely do have those moments, but I will say, like, without hopefully without sounding too hokey, that I've learned to trust my instinct, and if I trust my instinct, I can't you I generally don't feel bad about it. And then I've also tried to learn to trust my editors and that if I go with my gut and I say like, you know, like I said, I opened and closed with things that felt right to me because they were things that I felt, you know, those were feelings. And so and I and so to me they seemed correct. And then I have to try and trust my editors to say like my editor did actually say to me the ending is she was one who said this is ending is kind of abrupt. But I kind of was like, well, I don't really actually know how else I would end it. But I mean, so that's that, like, so I'm more comfortable with my beginnings and ends, but I certainly am very aware of them and I'm very I've definitely had that experience.
So as you were wrapping up the draft of this and refining this, were there any other difficult decisions to make to get it down to that length?
Yes, definitely. And there were some scenes that my editor and I went back and forth about, like actually the West Memphis pilot scene. I she was much more on the fence about that. She was like, I really don't know if we need this. It was like, it
is
wasn't.
Is this where you guys are parking the truck and the person is trying to help? Or is this going to use the showers? I'm trying to remember which scene this was.
No, that was at the very end. It was where it was one of the more dangerous, or people tend to talk about it as like a quote unquote dangerous stop.
Oh, yes. Got it.
Yeah. Okay. And we went back and forth on that a lot. And I'm glad it stayed in. As far as hard decisions, I'm trying to think, cause I know that there were some. Yeah. In the first draft, I had a lot more in there about her parents and her family and how they are and how she wound up doing this job kind of because of them and what her life was like growing up. And I cut some of that, and that hurt a little bit. I also had more about her own personal feminism and her own goals, like in her life goals. And I had to cut that out, and that also hurt, because I felt like those two things were important. Those were actually things that immediately stood out to me as things I wanted to include and didn't wind up having space for.
You know, one thing I wonder about is that the story ran in BuzzFeed, and being that it's pretty much an online-only publication, you know, what is your sense of the length? Was that just an arbitrary length that they gave you because they feel that this is the right size for these kinds of pieces? What was it like working with them and figuring out the right length for this, you know, long-form story?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I asked myself that as well. I was like, why can't you just run it all 10,000 words? You know, it's limitless space. But I think that it was, I think that it is kind of to keep it at a reasonable semi-digestible length, because 6,500 words is still very long. And you know, I think about like the Sean Penn Rolling Stone piece about El Chapo at 10,000 words, and that's rambling at a certain point, you know? and I think it really is like, let's have some clear and fast rules and regulations, even though we don't necessarily need to for space, or we're gonna have, you know, let's keep some law and order going, kind of. I think it also makes it easier as a writer to have parameters. So, you know, if she were to say to me, yeah, you know what, actually, like we can have, you know, we can run this at 8,500 words or at 65, then it would have been harder for me to make the choices that I needed to make in order to finish, you know?
Mm-hmm. And with Melissa, you know, she spent all this time with you in her truck. Was she asking you about what you were going to write at any point? Was she ever kind of, you know, probing you at all or curious about where the story itself was going to go once you guys wrapped up?
You know, surprisingly, she really wasn't. She just kind of did her thing, and I would have expected actually more of that. I think I can honestly only think of one thing that we talked about off the record. And it was a pretty short conversation. No, she really didn't. She wanted, honestly, no, she didn't ask me at all. And it was pretty remarkable.
And so when the story was released, it, you know, goes up online, did you hear back from her? Did you talk with her about it? Did you get a sense of what she felt or what she thought about the piece once it was out in the world?
Yeah, I did. I texted her immediately to tell her that it ran, because it was also a very long lead time. It wound up being, as I went with her last August, and it didn't run until, you know, a couple weeks ago. And she was like, what the hell? Like, are you really a journalist? Like, what happened with this story? So I texted her and said, and she was I was most worried about how she would feel about it. And she told me that she pulled off to the side of the road to read it, and that it made her cry. She said, I cried and I loved it. And you know, it's really, she really liked it. So that was great.
And then beyond her, once this is released out into the world and the internet, what kind of reaction did the piece get once it was out there?
You know, it got a really positive reaction. People really seemed to like it, and I was very worried. I was worried about sounding elitist, and I told my that from the get-go. You know, because like I said, I don't know anything about this world, and if I know how that can come across. And so I was really worried about that, but the best compliments that I've gotten and the ones that have been the most meaningful to me have been from the trucking industry. Like I've had a lot of people from the trucking industry reach out and say, "We're so glad you did this. We love this. Can I post it on my website?" So that was amazing. It was real well received.
That's great. Was there criticism from anybody about the piece?
Not that I know of. I don't read. But my fiance does sometimes, and he said that I think that one was something about this is elitist, and I'm not surprised. But I nothing that I know of. No one contacted me directly to tell me that I was a jerk. So, you know, right. So that's always nice.
And so was there anything that you'd taken away from the experience writing this story? Would you do this kind of story again if it presented itself?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, I think I one thing I learned is that it is actually very exhausting to do this kind of story. And if you had asked me that a couple of years ago, I would have said, yeah, I'd do, you know, six of them a year. I think that two or three of these a year is probably the max that I could do, like something that intense. But yeah, definitely. It was great. And I will say that the thing that I really took away from it is I see trucks differently. When I'm on the road, I get over for them. I move out of their way. I'm like, thank you for your service. You know, like I've really has changed my perception of being on the road with trucks, which I'm happy about. It's nice.
Right. And I think that's probably true. Most of us that read the story as well, I think I had a similar reaction. So I think that's a great place to wrap this. Jessica Ogilvie, thanks so much for coming on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. It was my pleasure.
Thanks so much again to Jessica Ogilvie for coming on the podcast. Two things struck me about her story. First off, is that this piece really fits into a really great tradition in narrative nonfiction journalism, which is of being an immersive story where the author really isn't just going in, talking to someone, doing some research, but literally being around the subject for a great deal of time. And in this case, we had Jessica actually in the truck basically for six straight days with the subject, really getting to know her, really getting a sense of what it was about. And this is increasingly rare in modern journalism. And so it's kind of an amazing story to hear someone who spent that much time with someone for a magazine article. And secondly, what I found interesting about this was, unlike a lot of the stories that we've covered so far in the podcast, this wasn't the case of a journalist hearing about something that happened and writing about it, or finding out about a particular thing that was going on and doing some research into it. The story was the journey. The story was going along with Melissa Rojas in her truck and just finding out what it's like. And it strikes me that's kind of a big gamble on the part of a writer. You don't go in there knowing what you're going to get. You don't know if it's going to be interesting. You don't know what your rapport with this person is going to be like. And I think in the end, you wind up with a really interesting piece here about what it's like to be a trucker. What are the unique stresses, both in general as a trucker and the trucking industry, but also to this particular woman and her challenges as a mother and as a provider and as someone has to deal with a very stressful job every week. So it's a fantastic story. If you didn't read it for the podcast, check it out afterwards. I think it'll be worth your time. And again, always, if you enjoy the show, please do me a huge favor. Rate and review it on iTunes. Those ratings and reviews really will help me and help the show. It helps people discover the podcast. So please take a few minutes if you can and review the show and rate it. I will be deeply, deeply grateful for that. So for the next episode, I've got a couple interviews lined up, but I'm still working on which one will be the next episode. Stay tuned on the website for information about the next episode and the article we'll be covering. Until then, this is Matt Pusateri, and thanks so much for listening to the Nonfiction Podcast.